All right, everybody, welcome back to AI Unchained. Big show today. When giants move, the earth shakes. And right now, the giants of tech and finance are definitely stomping around.
And occasionally stepping on retail investors in the process. But yes, very exciting stomping.
Okay, already with the skepticism 5 seconds in. But seriously, we've got a packed episode. Big tech making aggressive moves in AI hardware. OpenAI loading up the roster ahead of its potential IPO. And a pretty fascinating clash between Bitcoin enthusiasm and macroeconomic reality.
Translation: hype versus gravity.
Or opportunity versus pessimism.
No. Risk management versus vibes.
Fair. We'll let the audience decide. But first, we've got to start with a story that actually connects to predictions we made months ago. Remember back on April 18th when we talked about the SEC signaling a more crypto-friendly posture?
Yes, and we said if regulators opened the door wider, retail money would pile into crypto-adjacent products and we could see a pretty sharp correction later.
Exactly. And now we're seeing headlines about everyday savers betting big on Bitcoin-related strategy plays, specifically the STRC vehicle, and it's falling.
Which is the least surprising outcome imaginable. Retail piling into leveraged or complex crypto exposure after a big run-up. That's basically a market cycle tradition.
Hold on, though. This is where I'm actually more optimistic. To me, this shows Bitcoin becoming part of mainstream portfolio experimentation. This could be huge for long-term adoption.
Wait. Experimentation is a very polite way to describe people chasing yield on something they probably don't fully understand.
Maybe. But it also means the financial infrastructure around Bitcoin is getting deeper. Strategy vehicles, structured products, institutional wrappers.
And also more ways for people to lose money quickly if volatility hits.
See, this is why we do the show together.
Exactly. You're the this changes everything guy. I'm the have you read the risk disclosure person.
And speaking of big shifts, Amazon is making a move that could directly challenge Nvidia by selling its own AI chips more aggressively.
Which is a fascinating strategy, but I'm not convinced they can dent Nvidia's dominance anytime soon.
Oh. I think they can. Look, hyperscalers designing their own silicon. This is a massive trend. If Amazon gets traction here, we could see real competition in AI compute.
Or we could see a repeat of what happens every time someone claims they're going to dethrone Nvidia.
Shots fired already.
I'm just saying, the CUDA ecosystem is sticky.
All right, we're definitely debating that one today.
And we also have to talk about OpenAI bringing in some serious heavy hitters as it moves toward an IPO.
That one, I'm extremely bullish on.
Of course you are.
Leadership bench strength before a public listing? That signals confidence.
Or it signals they know the scrutiny is about to get a lot more intense.
Either way, the chess pieces are moving.
And we'll also touch on the weird market dynamic where Bitcoin is being described as deeply discounted compared to AI stocks, while the Fed might still keep rates high.
Macro versus momentum.
Exactly. And that tension could define the rest of this year.
So today's theme is simple. Big tech moves. Amazon, OpenAI, and the broader AI economy shifting under our feet.
Plus, retail investors diving into crypto strategies again, which historically has ended. Mixed.
Let's just say the optimism. Skepticism meter is already maxed out.
And we haven't even started the first story yet.
Let's get into it. Okay, this one is fascinating. Everyday investors piling into this thing called STRC, basically preferred stock from Michael Saylor's Bitcoin empire. And now it's dropping. It hit about $82 recently after being issued around a $100 par value. But here's why this matters. People were buying it for an 11.5% dividend. 11.5. In this interest rate environment, that's catnip.
Hold on, though. That's exactly the problem. When you hear 11.5% yield and then Saylor compares it to money market funds or FDIC-insured bank accounts, that should set off alarm bells. Those are not remotely the same risk profile.
Sure, but the concept is actually pretty clever. Strategy, formerly MicroStrategy, is basically raising capital through preferred shares, paying a big dividend, and then buying Bitcoin with the proceeds. If Bitcoin goes up over the long term, the whole structure works.
If doing a lot of work there, because the flip side is what we're seeing right now. The preferred stock is supposed to be the boring part of the capital stack, and yet it's already fallen to about $82 from $100. That's a 17 to 18% drop for something people thought was income-like.
But that's still a market pricing issue, not necessarily a failure of the model. Preferred shares can trade below par all the time.
Wait. These weren't marketed like normal preferreds, though. Some of these buyers are retirees or regular workers. One guy in the story, an IT worker, put around $425,000 into STRC and now says he feels misled. That's real money.
Yeah, but look at the other example. A retired slot machine technician in Vegas bought over $400,000 of STRC and a similar product called SATA from Strive. He's treating it like part of an income portfolio and says he might hold it for years.
That's exactly what concerns me. You've got people who think they're holding a dividend product when in reality, they're indirectly betting on Bitcoin volatility.
Indirectly, yes, but that's also the upside. I'm bullish on this structure long term. If Bitcoin goes through another cycle up, Strategy can issue more shares above that $100 par value and raise billions. They've already done it several times.
But that depends entirely on investor enthusiasm staying high. Once the price drops below par, like now at $82, that whole issuance machine stalls?
Short term, maybe. But think about the financial engineering here. Saylor is basically turning Bitcoin into a yield product. That's huge. Crypto historically doesn't produce cash flow, right? This structure kind of synthesizes one.
I don't buy that. The yield isn't coming from Bitcoin magically generating income. It's coming from financial structuring and investor demand. If Bitcoin tanks or capital dries up, the dividend suddenly looks very fragile.
The dividend is still contractual, though.
Preferred dividends can be suspended.
Fair.
And the other issue is messaging. When you compare something to a money market fund or FDIC-insured account, retail investors hear safe. But this thing's price already swung nearly 20%.
Okay, but let's be honest. Anyone touching something tied to Bitcoin should expect volatility.
You say that, but the people buying preferred stock often don't. That's the whole point of preferreds. They're supposed to be the boring layer above common equity.
So maybe the takeaway is this is a new hybrid category. It's not a bond, it's not a stock. It's basically a Bitcoin-linked income product.
Or you could call it what it is, leverage with a marketing wrapper.
That's harsh. I'd call it innovative capital markets engineering.
I'd call it a stress test. And right now, that stress test is happening in real time with the price sitting in the low 80s.
Fair enough. But if Bitcoin rips later this year and these things climb back toward $100, suddenly everyone calling it reckless will say Saylor's a genius again.
That's the crypto cycle in one sentence.
Exactly. And speaking of cycles, the bigger question is whether these Bitcoin treasury companies, Strategy, Strive, and whoever comes next, are about to become an entirely new category of financial firm, which actually connects to the next thing we should talk about. Okay, this one is fascinating. OpenAI is clearly gearing up for an IPO and they're bringing in some serious talent. Noam Chazier leaving Google DeepMind, this is a big deal. This is one of the guys behind Attention is All You Need, the 2017 paper that basically invented the transformer architecture. That's the core technology behind ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, everything. I'm bullish on this move.
Hold on, though. You're framing it like OpenAI just grabbed Einstein out of the physics department. Chazier is brilliant, yes, but he's already been bouncing around between Google and his own startup, Character AI. Remember, Google paid about $2.7 billion just to bring that tech back in-house 2 years ago. That tells me the market for elite AI researchers is getting a little musical chairs.
Sure, but that's exactly why it matters. These labs, OpenAI, Google, Anthropic, Meta, they're all competing for the same maybe 200 people on Earth who really understand frontier AI. When OpenAI pulls one of the co-authors of the Transformer paper away from Google, that's like the Lakers stealing a star player from the Warriors right before the playoffs.
Or it's a sign the league is getting unstable. Let's pump the brakes on, assuming this is pure upside. There's also the internal culture piece. The reporting says Chazier had already been stirring the pot at Google, posting controversial opinions internally about transgender issues and the Gaza war. Google apparently deleted some of those posts.
Yeah, but Silicon Valley labs are full of opinionated weirdos. That's kind of the point. A lot of the most important breakthroughs came from people who are a little, let's say, unconventional.
Unconventional is one thing. Public controversy is another. If OpenAI is heading toward an IPO, The last thing they want is internal drama spilling into headlines. Public markets hate that stuff.
Wait. This is exactly why the second hire matters. Dean Ball, former White House AI policy official. He's coming in to lead something called the Strategic Futures Team.
Which sounds slightly ominous.
It's basically OpenAI saying, we're not just building models, we're shaping the rules of the game. Ball worked on America's AI action plan when he was in government. Now he's reporting directly to the chief strategy officer and working on policy around catastrophic risk, recursive self-improvement.
Okay, let's translate that, because people hear those phrases and think Terminator.
Yeah, exactly. Recursive self-improvement basically means AI systems that can help design better AI systems. It's the theoretical snowball effect where models start accelerating their own development.
Which is precisely why governments are nervous. And here's my concern. OpenAI hiring someone to influence frontier AI policy right before going public looks a lot like regulatory capture. The company building the most powerful models is also trying to shape the rules that govern them.
Or, here's why this matters. It could mean OpenAI is taking governance seriously. If you're building tech that might reshape entire industries, you need people who understand Washington.
Sure, but there's a power dynamic here. OpenAI already has massive influence. If they stack their team with the scientists who invented the technology and policy people who shape the regulations, smaller competitors might get squeezed out.
I disagree. Talent concentration tends to accelerate innovation. Look at the history of tech clusters, Bell Labs, Xerox PARC. When you pack brilliant people together, breakthroughs happen faster.
The flip side is monopolies happen faster.
Fair. But if OpenAI is heading toward an IPO, investors are going to look for exactly this: star researchers and serious policy muscle. It's basically a signal that they're trying to be the IBM of AI, not just another startup.
Or it signals an arms race where every lab is poaching everyone else. We've already seen Meta hiring aggressively, Anthropic pulling people from OpenAI, Google trying to hold on to DeepMind talent. This looks less like stability before an IPO and more like chaos in the talent market.
But chaos can still produce winners. If OpenAI ends up with one of the original Transformer architects and a Washington insider shaping AI policy at the same time, that's a pretty formidable combination.
I'll concede this. Strategically, it's clever. Scientifically credible leadership plus political navigation. But whether that translates into durable advantage or just more AI lab drama, we'll see.
Okay, but that raises the bigger question about the IPO itself. Because if OpenAI is assembling this kind of bench right now,
then they're clearly trying to tell a story to public markets.
Exactly. And the question is whether Wall Street buys that story when the time comes. So here's a spicy one. Amazon might start selling its AI chips, specifically Trainium, to other companies. And I gotta say, this could be huge. NVIDIA's been basically the toll booth of the AI economy. AWS stepping in as a chip vendor? I'm bullish on this.
Hold on, though. NVIDIA's revenue run rate right now is about $326 billion. Amazon saying their chips could theoretically be a $50 billion business if it were standalone? That's interesting, but it's not exactly dethroning the king.
Sure, but $50 billion is not small potatoes. That's basically the size of Intel's whole annual revenue some years. And think about Amazon's advantage here. They already run the largest cloud platform. They've been designing these chips for their own infrastructure for years.
Right, but that's also the problem. The whole reason AWS built Trainium in the first place was to use it internally. The real money isn't selling the chips. It's charging people for the compute, storage, networking, all the cloud services around it. That's the AWS flywheel.
Totally. But imagine the strategy shift. If they start selling racks of Trainium to companies building their own data centers, suddenly Amazon becomes both the infrastructure provider and the hardware supplier. NVIDIA's moat gets a little thinner.
Wait. Racks of chips is not the same as the NVIDIA ecosystem. NVIDIA isn't just selling silicon. They've built CUDA, developer tools, optimized libraries. The entire AI software stack runs on NVIDIA by default. Switching off, that is painful.
That's true today, but software moats can erode. Look at what's happening with OpenAI frameworks. PyTorch, Jax, all these layers are getting more hardware agnostic. If Trainium is cheaper per training run, companies will absolutely port workloads.
I'm not so sure it's that simple. The article even says Amazon's chips are selling out instantly just for their own cloud customers. Andy Jassy said Trainium capacity basically sold out immediately, and even Trainium 4, which isn't even released yet, already has demand lined up.
Which is exactly why I think selling chips externally makes sense. If demand is that strong, you spin up a second revenue stream. It's basically what Nvidia did. They didn't start as the AI king. They just kept expanding where demand was.
But Amazon risks cannibalizing AWS. Think about it. If I'm a big AI startup and I can buy Trainium hardware directly, I might build my own data center instead of running everything on AWS.
I don't buy that. Running your own data center is brutal. Power contracts, cooling, networking, maintenance. Most startups don't want that headache. They'll still go cloud.
Some won't. Look at OpenAI with Microsoft infrastructure or companies building massive private clusters. The biggest AI labs are already moving toward owning compute because it's cheaper long term.
Fair, but here's the strategic angle I'm excited about. Nvidia right now has pricing power because there's basically no alternative at scale. If Amazon becomes a credible second supplier, even at $50 billion scale, suddenly the market has competition.
Competition, maybe? Replacement? No. Nvidia's lead is still enormous.
I'm not saying replacement. I'm saying pressure. And when the biggest cloud provider in the world starts designing and selling chips, that changes the board.
The flip side is Amazon might realize selling chips is less lucrative than selling compute. They've resisted doing this for years for exactly that reason.
True, but even the talk of it signals something. The AI hardware stack is fragmenting. It's not just Nvidia anymore. You've got Google TPUs, Amazon Trainium, Microsoft partnering with AMD.
And every cloud provider trying to vertically integrate their stack.
Exactly. And that arms race is just getting started, which actually leads into the next thing happening in AI infrastructure this week. So here's a spicy one. Bitwise is out saying Bitcoin is basically in a deep value zone right now. Their Mayer multiple, basically price relative to the 200-day average, is below 1.0. Historically, that's been the accumulation zone. Meanwhile, AI stocks like Nvidia are trading way above trend. I'm bullish on this setup.
Hold on, though. I get the valuation argument, but markets aren't just about cheap. Liquidity matters. And right now, liquidity might be about to get sucked out of the room.
You mean the Fed?
The Fed and everything else competing for money. The Fed kept rates at about 3.5 to 3.75% this week, which the market expected, but the tone is still pretty hawkish. If money stays expensive, speculative assets don't get the same inflows.
Sure. But wait. This is exactly when Bitcoin historically does well. When the signal says it's undervalued relative to trend, long-term buyers step in. That's literally what the Mayer multiple has shown in past cycles.
Except the data they cited also says realized cap growth has been in a bear phase since late October 2025. Translation in plain English. New money isn't really coming into the Bitcoin network right now. So who's doing the buying?
Long-term holders, institutions, ETFs. You only need a small marginal shift in flows to move the price.
But there's a giant competing magnet for capital right now, AI. Look at what's in the pipeline. Potential raises tied to SpaceX, Anthropic, OpenAI. Bitwise says those deals alone could pull in over $200 billion of investor demand.
Which is exactly why I think Bitcoin gets interesting here.
Wait, how does that help Bitcoin?
Because AI stocks are getting crowded. Nvidia, for example, is trading at huge premiums relative to its historical trend levels. Everyone's piled in. When assets get that extended, smart money starts looking for the next asymmetrical bet.
Or they just keep buying the thing that's actually generating revenue. That's the flip side. AI companies are selling GPUs, models, cloud services. Bitcoin is still a narrative asset for a lot of investors.
I disagree there. Bitcoin is digital gold with a fixed supply. And look at gold right now. It popped above $4,300 and then slipped back to around $4,244. That tells me the macro hedge trade is shaky. Bitcoin could be the higher beta version of that hedge.
Except Bitcoin didn't behave like a hedge after the Fed announcement. It dropped below $64,000 and had its heaviest selling volume right around $66,200. That's not exactly screaming institutional accumulation.
Short term, sure. But big picture, If AI IPOs soak up liquidity temporarily, that could delay the Bitcoin move, not cancel it.
I think you're underestimating the liquidity squeeze scenario. If rates stay high and $200 billion flows into shiny AI offerings, Bitcoin could stay stuck in that so-called deep value zone for a long time.
Okay, but that's the opportunity. Markets reward patience. When something is statistically cheap relative to trend and everyone's distracted by the next hot sector, those are the setups that end up being huge.
Or they're value traps. Crypto has had a few of those.
Fair. But if I had to place the bet today, over the next 12 to 18 months, I think Bitcoin outperforms a lot of these AI names from current levels.
I'll take the other side of that for now. I think AI keeps attracting capital until we actually see monetary policy loosen.
All right. We've got a clean disagreement on the board.
And speaking of capital chasing the AI, boom. The amount of money flooding into new model companies right now is getting kind of absurd, which brings up the next thing we should talk about.
All right, let's land the plane. Big episode today. We covered the explosion of open source AI models, the big tech earnings that keep pouring billions into compute, and the growing political push to regulate all of it. My big takeaway? The pace isn't slowing down. If anything, the competition is accelerating. And honestly, I'm bullish on this. This could be huge for innovation.
Hold on, though, before we pop the champagne. Yes, the innovation is real. But we also talked about the flip side. Massive capital concentration, regulatory confusion, and governments trying to catch up to technology that's moving way faster than policy. That gap worries me. When rules arrive late, they often arrive clumsy.
Sure, but that's also when breakthroughs happen. Look at what we're seeing with smaller labs and open source communities. Wait. This is the part people underestimate. When powerful models get cheaper and more accessible, you don't just get more AI companies. You get entirely new industries.
Or you get a flood of half-baked products, security risks, and companies discovering that AI strategy doesn't automatically mean profit. Remember when everyone said autonomous vehicles would dominate the roads by 2022?
Hey. Some of us said 2025.
And we're still waiting.
Fair enough. But I'll say this. We've seen this movie before with cloud computing and smartphones. Early chaos, then massive value creation. Here's why this matters. AI is becoming infrastructure. And once something becomes infrastructure, the upside compounds.
I'll grant you that the infrastructure angle is real. But infrastructure also means dependency. Governments will care. Regulators will step in. And geopolitics, especially around chips and compute, will shape who actually controls the future of AI.
Okay, prediction time. I'll go first. My bold prediction. Within the next 18 months, an open source AI model will match or beat the top proprietary models on at least one major benchmark, and it'll spark a startup wave bigger than the early mobile app boom. I'm calling it now.
I'm not so sure. My prediction goes the other direction. I think within 2 years, we'll see the first major AI regulatory shock, something like a sudden global restriction on model training or compute exports after a high-profile misuse incident. The industry thinks it can move fast and fix things later, but politics doesn't work that way.
Wow, that's a very core prediction.
Someone has to pump the brakes.
And someone has to drive the car.
Preferably not into a wall.
Okay. We'll mark the tape and revisit those predictions. If you've been listening since earlier episodes, you know we love checking the scoreboard. Sometimes we're right. Sometimes Core reminds me I was wildly optimistic.
Frequently.
Debatable.
Agree to disagree.
All right, folks, that's our show. If you enjoyed the discussion, share the episode, send it to a friend who's deep in tech, policy, or startups.
And next time, we'll be watching a few things closely. Whether AI funding keeps accelerating, how governments respond to the compute race, and whether any of those new models actually deliver real-world value.
Because if they do,
the consequences, good and bad, are going to scale very quickly.
I'm excited about it.
I'm cautious about it.
And that's why this works.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to AI Unchained.